This is Sports Sunday.
This next hour is going to be nuts.
With Joshua Briscoe.
You're going to have to buckle up and then just put your head between your knees and put your hands over your head like you're in a plane crash. Which, by the way, isn't going to help if, in fact, you ever are in a plane crash.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Hope you're having an excellent Sunday morning here in the middle of a long weekend. Hope you have a safe and good and memorable Memorial Day tomorrow. Speaking of the plans for maybe the rest of the day here, maybe your plans for the rest of the long weekend, a few things happening on Sports Radio 810 this afternoon and tomorrow as well. The Ship with Darren Smith starts in an hour as we wrap up on Sports Sunday in an hour here on 810. And then at 5 o'clock, it's the Coca-Cola 600. Some more NASCAR action as NASCAR continues to be one of the things able to pull off their sporting events right now. So a good chance to find your lost love of NASCAR. That's sort of where I've been at. I cared about NASCAR for a while, and then it just sort of phased out of my life. And right now, it's the only game in town. So you can hear the Coca-Cola 600 at 5 o'clock tonight here on Sports Radio 810, and then tomorrow we can help you scratch your football itch. It's two very different, very fun, very interesting things that we have on 810 tomorrow afternoon. Two Super Bowls involving the Chiefs, which there are not very many of, but we've got them. We have the bookends of the Super Bowl era as of right now. At 3:30 tomorrow, Super Bowl 54, Chiefs versus 49ers, again at 3:30. That kicks off tomorrow. If you haven't heard it yet, the radio call was really, really fun. That's what I was listening to as the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, because I eventually got to the point here in the building where I think at least Beards was listening to the Westwood One radio call, and so he was about 6 seconds ahead of the TV, and so I eventually just started wearing my headphones and listening to the radio call because I was tired of hearing Beards make noises from three rooms away, spoiling that something would be happening. And eventually we were all just listening to Kevin Harlan on the call and watching the replay six or 7 seconds later. It's a great call and obviously an incredible game. So that's it at 3:30 tomorrow. And then starting at 7, it's Super Bowl I. Chiefs-Packers, the first Super Bowl, will be on air here on Sports Radio 810 at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. Should be super cool to get to hear, literally history. Literally, like in every plausible sense of the word, radio history, sports history, obviously NFL and Super Bowl history. I'm excited to hear that tomorrow again at 7. It'll be super interesting, super weird in a very, very cool way. So that's the Super Bowl doubleheader tomorrow. The bookends, 54 at 3:30 and then Super Bowl I at 7. As we look ahead, though, much like Andy Reid, to Super Bowl 55, which right now the Chiefs are the favorite to win. Andy Reid is in a place that even he and all of his experience and all of his time coaching is certainly not accustomed to. I will not say that he is not prepared for it, though, because I think he's prepared for literally everything. But we played you the clips at the very beginning of today's show. If you've been with us here for the last couple of hours, first of all, how and thanks. But we've played snippets of Andy Reid. We played a couple Friday night. We played a couple earlier in the show today. But his entire presser from Friday, I found genuinely like super interesting, because you have some of the specific conversations about individual players and whatnot. You have the views of where they're at right now with all these virtual OTAs, how long they can keep that up, where exactly it may lead them, and also what it might be like to eventually play without fans in the stands. Or with less fans in the stands. What is home field advantage like without without the noise that you expect from Arrowhead Stadium. Andy Reid covered all of that and much more in his Friday press conference with reporters. Let's hear that now here on Sports Radio 810.
All right. Hey, good to be with you guys and ladies. It's an interesting time, and we're making the best of it and getting a lot of work done. We're still working through our WebEx app that we have on our iPads and computers, and it's our way that we can meet with the players for 2 hours per day and interact with them and still do our installs. So it's been good for us that way. We're not in office. We're in our basement still and homes. And so that's where I'm coming from and to you right now. So anyways, with that, time's yours.
Hi, Andy. How you doing today?
Doing good, Adam. Thanks.
Good. Hey, I wanted to get your thoughts on the proposal for the replacement or possible replacement for the onside kick, the fourth and 15 rule. Just your thoughts on that change in general, and if that rule is instituted, how do you think your team will fare under that rule?
Well, I don't know if it's going to pass or not. I know the special teams coaches aren't real big on that. It takes away obviously one of the elements of theirs, and then it's also the kickoff, which has been under scrutiny here, and kickoff returns. So to keep the integrity of the game, you like that part of it. On the other hand, if it does pass and we've got a guy that can do fourth and 15s, I mean, he would give us an opportunity to be able to do that. So I've got kind of mixed thoughts on it. I would probably stick, being an old guy, I'd probably stick with the integrity of the game as it sits right now, but I can also see where the other part could be exciting too.
Hey, Coach, good to see you as always. Hope you're well.
You're the only one that's been able to keep his hair right. So.
Thanks, Coach. Hey, yeah. You mentioned the installs that you're going through right now, and phase three of the off-season workout program is typically for installs and learning. But how big of a challenge is it for you as the head coach and also your coaching staff to see how it's going? And second part to that is, how does that affect what you typically like to see in a normal year out of the players at this time before camp, especially with training battles still to go? Position battles.
The coaches have used, because we can't go on the field, the coaches have used unique tools with them as far as maybe calling on a player to do an install, to install a play or whatever it might be. So for us, it's given all our coaches an opportunity to do installs as we go. Again, just to keep the focus of the player and to keep it fresh. Other than that, it's been great. I just phase three for us, we're kind of keeping the same schedule that we had before for the most part to this point. So we're going from two installs to three installs. And then we work from there. But again, we're still not able to be on the field.
Hey, Coach, you've talked before about coaching being a fraternity, and you haven't been opposed to going out and talking to other coaches for advice, and they come to you as well. I'm just curious, have you reached out to anyone, whether it be, a pro level, coach, college level, other sports, about coaches who have taken their teams to back-to-back championships and done that, for just advice and maybe how you could navigate this?
Yeah, no, I haven't. I was lucky to be on a team that did that one time. So I have that bank, but no, I have not, Matt. However, I have talked to a lot of coaches, but I haven't had that actual discussion.
Coach, just as this conversation around fanless games evolves, I'm curious, obviously, with the Chiefs playing in what they call the loudest stadium in the world, I'm curious if you think maybe the Chiefs are at a disadvantage if there are fanless games or capacity caps with the fans at the games.
Yeah, I don't think, first of all, we love our our fans. I mean, they are the loudest in the world, and it's ridiculous how loud it gets for our opponents. So, on the other hand, we'll still go play, and it'll be kind of that way. There'll probably be a lot more talking with the players that you can hear. You know, those guys get pretty creative out there in their conversations. So, but the actual fans, we'll miss them if that's where it goes, but we'll still be able to function.
Coach, thank you for the time. Along the lines kind of Aaron Donald was quoted yesterday as saying, you can't play the game without fans. I'm just curious, first, you know, where you sit on that. I mean, the reality may be, as we're seeing sports start, that there are no fans. Or how would you weigh in on not having fans? And then how long can you go virtually prepping? Like, at what point does, you know, rubber have to meet the road and pads have to go on and you know, you actually have to start hitting to really prepare for a real NFL season? Or can you do it all virtually and just be in close quarters only on game day?
Yeah, listen, I mean, we probably could do anything. I mean, and still put out a good product. I mean, that's how our mindset is as players and coaches. However, you sure would like to have the opportunity to get back on the field and do it. I think it'd make for a better game. As far as the fans go, you know, I understand what Aaron's saying. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, it doesn't feel like it makes sense to be without fans, but it's also part of what we would all have to deal with if that's the situation that it comes to. My hope is that we can get everybody back out there, and we can have a stadium full of people, and we can go, and everybody can stay safe. And that's probably the most important thing. Well, it is the most important thing as we go forward. So. And I'd say that same thing for your teams. All the teams around the world that are playing these different sports and are getting together now, I know safety ends up being the thing that's talked about the most, and that we make sure that we're doing that with our players.
Hey, Coach, hope you're doing well.
Hey, Sam, good. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Kind of to build off what Seren asked, but I'm wondering if you could maybe offer specifics about exactly what you miss out on by not being on the field, what maybe concerns you most, whether it's one or two things, if you don't get enough on-field time with the guys.
Yeah, so I'd probably tell you timing of routes. I'd tell you break points on the secondary and linebackers. The offensive line is fundamentals, and defensive line is more fundamental work. I think that you know, if you talk to medical people, that you understand that injuries can go up if you're not working change of direction or being tugged on, like a running back would be tackled and he's got to pull through a tackle, that it has a tendency to up injuries. We saw that a little bit with the lockout year, with Achilles tendons and that. So those things end up being important, but from a pure football standpoint, you know, it's your timing, your breaks, and the guys are still going to be competitive. They're going to do the best they possibly can do with whatever we give them. But it sure would help, I think, the injury area and also the game if we have a little buildup to it.
Hey, Andy. Thanks again.
Hey, Nate. Yep.
You know, Steve sort of mentioned this earlier this week, but, you know, you try at this point to get a rough idea of what – your rookie class can do, especially once you take them in the draft, because you've seen them on the field, whether it's in rookie minicamp or in the OTA period. With that not being the case, I'm just wondering if there's anything that you've learned about your rookies in this virtual remote process, and are there things you're starting to identify that you want to sort of implement or have them work on when you guys do get a chance to get on the field?
Yeah, so I have staff meetings, and I still ask about the players and who's doing well, and predominantly the rookies, as far as learning. Because I think if we can over-emphasize the learning part of it now, not that we don't, but we can really emphasize that now, that there's a chance it eliminates just an inch of that angst when they're on the field where they can perform athletically or physically the best of their ability. So we're kind of putting a hammer down on that and working it and emphasizing it to the player. I'm getting good reports back from the coaches on the rookies. The guys are working their tail off right now. And, you know, coaches give quizzes and all those things too, so you get an idea of the feedback. And you just have the guy, I'd go, hey, Nate, why don't you explain to the guys 22Z and take us through it and detail it. So you get a feel there on exactly what the guys, what they know. And then you, with the rookies, you've got a couple extra hours that you can work with them. So the coaches have a little log time in there where they can get the rookies aside and visit with them.
Hi, Coach. How are you?
I'm doing good, Karen. Thanks.
Thank you. Two things. One, Peter Vermees basically said, without fans, there's no home field advantage. And I wondered if based on all the things we talked about already, you feel that way. And the other thing is just that, have you heard of any precautions that the league may take that make you feel better about guys getting back together on the field, you know, hitting, breathing and stuff? Have you heard some things that the league is considering that you like?
Well, they're going through a lot of things, whether it's studies of other sports that are starting up around the world. They're keeping close track on that. I'm sure they've talked about it. I haven't been in the meetings, but I know they're meeting a lot on exactly player safety and fan safety. So I know whatever they come up with will be good. And it's also the union that works with the players union also works with them on that. So they'll come up with a good solution. I don't know what those are right now, but I know it'll be good once it happens. What was the other part of your question there?
The other part was just, we had talked about fans and their importance, but Peter Vermees basically said he doesn't believe if you don't have fans, you have no home field advantage.
Yeah. So there's home field advantage with the fans. There's home field advantage that you don't travel and that you know the facility and where everything lays on that field. So you have that part of it. But I would tell you, we'd miss the fans if that's the direction it goes. I mean, we got the best fans in the NFL, so we'd miss the fans. But again, you know, when you're given these things, you have to go through and say, okay, this is what we've got, fellas. And you got to muster it up and go play and still do all that. So, you know, and then if nothing else, we know our fans are watching. because the Kansas City fans don't miss a beat. You know, they'll make sure they know that they'll make sure that our players know that they're behind us.
Hey, Andy, just wondering what you guys liked about Shea Patterson. And also, what you got, how well you got to know him through this kind of distant coaching season. And one other thing, real quick, Pat's going to be, as you know, giving that commencement speech tomorrow. As a guy who spent a lot of time in front of a microphone, what kind of advice do you have for him?
Yeah, well, I'll start with that one because I think that that's a real neat thing that he's having an opportunity to do with Texas Tech. So. He is passionate about sports. He's passionate about Tech. And so I just think it's a neat thing that he'd have that opportunity to do it. And Pat's pretty cool cucumber there. He'll and he's a sharp kid and speaks well. So I think he'll have a nice presentation for him. But the main thing is just to relax and enjoy the moment. And, you know, it's what a great experience it is. And then as far as Shea goes, I started chuckling when you asked because you got everything behind you, Michigan State. And here's a Michigan kid. You guys are like arch rivals. So, and we've got a lot of Michigan kind of background on our in our quarterback room there. But with Chad and Jordan actually and Shea played together. So at Mississippi. So they also know each other. But we'll see. We'll see how he does. And it's an opportunity for him. To make our football team. And that's how he has to look at it. It doesn't matter how you get in the door, you're in the door. Now, whatever you do with it, you do. If, you know, you got to handle yourself the right way and work with it. But Jim Harbaugh spoke highly of him, and I trust Jim.
Coach, I know for the most part, you know, football is your focus, right? That's what you want to do. You're not wanting to do other things. Sometimes life runs into sports, right? And social issues run into sports, different things. The Rooney Rule has been talked about a lot this week again, and some of the proposed changes that were out there. And there's even some people calling it, you know, maybe the Bieniemy Rule, right? Eric Bieniemy is starting to become, you know, the face of the league. He's a guy that has a position, certainly has the resume to be a head coach. I've heard your thoughts on it. I know where you kind of stand, but could you detail maybe what it does to Eric Bieniemy? I mean, he seems like you. He seems to just want to coach football. Not that he doesn't have, you know, strong, passionate, you know, ideas and values and things like that, but he seems to be a reluctant, you know, front man, if you will, for this, but he's yet thrust into that role. How has that affected him as a coach, and what advice do you give him being thrust into that role?
Yeah, well, first of all, keep being you, right? So that's always the most important thing, and it's gotten him to this point. And he'll have an opportunity here as a head coach. But listen, I think anything that helps opportunity, I'm good with, as long as it doesn't put that person in a bind or disadvantage coming in, you know, whatever it is. So I think in Eric's situation. And everybody that interviews, you're in there for only a couple hours with the owners, and so do they really get to know you in that time? And I wish there was an extended period of time that they could visit with you. And we're always cramming in, owners are always having to cram in these interviews, but to actually have enough time to get to know what the person is all about. And I think that becomes an important thing. The more you're with Eric Bieniemy, the more you appreciate him and understand him and know that he's a great leader of men. And so does an owner actually have that time, or are we rushing? And some of it's our schedule because of the playoffs. Are we rushing in and okay, I got to get these three, you know, interviews done, boom, 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 boom. And does that owner actually see the worth and that person interviewing? And I worry more about those kind of things. I mean, Eric's had opportunities to interview, but it's always a bang bang thing, and you get a couple hours and then you're out. I mean, how well do you get to know a guy in a couple hours?
Coach, again, thanks for everything. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, you bet, BJ.
Just curious with the installs, particularly as it relates to the young guys. And I know you said that you'd been getting reports from your coaches that have been going through that with them. I'm just curious, because of the challenge of already being a young guy trying to play catch up and learn the system, what kind of either extra help have they been given, or are the install meetings set up differently between veterans and young guys? Just, I guess, logistically, how are you making sure those young guys are absorbing everything you're giving them?
Yeah, so we've tried to keep this time consistent. They've got a two-hour period with the veterans. That's what you have. With the rookies, you have a five-hour period that you can work with them. So we try to work in a couple extra hours for the rookies to meet. We were originally doing it with Dave Tobe and the coaches. So Dave got a little bit of special teams introduction to the guys, and then the coaches had them for a nice block of 2 hours. But anyways, you've got that extra time, and our coaches use that. So they get on with them, and in some cases, just one or two guys in a room. So they get, or whatever we're calling these rooms, but we're doing it this way here. So virtually, but they get that time. And right now for those kids, time's important, and your attitude and approach to that is important. Are you going to stay awake looking at this screen? Are you going to stay awake? We make them keep their face showing and not click off the camera, so we see them. Where that's a little bit of interaction there. One of the things we always teach the guys is when the coach is talking, try to make eye contact with them if you're not writing something down, so that you stay focused on it. And whether it's on the field or in a meeting, eyes up and on the person that's speaking. So these guys are doing that. We've had 100% participation and they're cranking. I mean, they're going, and I've been very happy with that, their approach. So far, so good.
That's Chiefs head coach Andy Reid from a little bit earlier this week on Friday. I think that so much of that stuff, we talked about this at the beginning of the show, but so much of that stuff about having players, asking players to diagnose a play or explain a scheme or whatever is such a funny, just like professor's trick that works. Like it's a great strategy to have people be able to not just learn a topic, but also teach it back. I think it's really interesting. And then also Bienemy has talked on his own also about the Rooney rule. And we've talked about that a ton. And if you want to hear any of what I've had to say on that, you can check out the Almost Entirely Sports podcast page, aes.show. And there's a bunch of stuff there. We'll take a break for now, though. 30 minutes left in Sports Sunday. More whenever we come back here on Sports Radio 810.
This is Sports Sunday.
And Giesert, I think the best physical evidence that we have as a culture for evidence of Satan being real.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Like, I've never seen a demon in the biblical sense, but I also might have. I might be looking at one right now.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
11:30 a.m. on a Sunday feels like a totally reasonable time to get unreasonably annoyed at a stupid sports take, right? Yeah, okay. There was a tweet from earlier this week, and I made it through hours and hours and hours of sports talk radio without ever was resorting to this as a topic. But here we are, and I have not yet fully complained about this. So now I'm going to. It was a tweet from Bleacher Report. Got a picture of Patrick Mahomes, a picture of Lamar Jackson. The Bleacher Report staff was asked if they'd take Mahomes or Lamar. The vote was 4-3. Which QB would you pick? This is only going to end up resulting in me sounding like a Lamar Jackson hater, which I am not. But this could be about literally Mahomes versus anyone, and I would be unreasonably annoyed with the tweet or article or whatever. It's not... Weirdly, I don't even think it's the answer that bothers me. I think the fact that this question is even being asked right now, I find completely asinine. Because there's simply not an intellectually honest argument for Lamar Jackson. The only argument is I want to be contrarian, which plenty of people will do that for the rest of time. And this graphic will change, and this is more about Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, but this little graphic will change from we asked our staff, would you rather have Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson? In a year, it'll say, would you rather have Patrick Mahomes or Kyler Murray? And then, would you rather have Patrick Mahomes or Tua Tagovailoa? Would you rather have Patrick Mahomes or Joe Burrow? Would you rather have Patrick Mahomes or Trevor Lawrence? The vote was 4-3. It's going to happen for the next decade. And every time, I'm going to have to roll my eyes at it. Because if I don't roll my eyes, I'm going to get visibly upset by it. There are so many good, smart, reasonable, fair, fun quarterback conversations that you can have right now. Because you want to have a conversation about Lamar versus Deshaun Watson. We could do that. I would take Deshaun Watson at this point, But that's, you know, that's because I think I would rather build an offense that way than in a way that, that works around Lamar Jackson. You have a little bit of a concern about how, you know, will that type of offense work for more than 1 year? My inclination is that it actually will, but will Lamar Jackson stay healthy for this entire time? It's very hard to say. But that's fine. How about Lamar Jackson versus, let's go Tua, let's go Burrow. Should the Bengals have offered the number one overall pick for Lamar Jackson? Should the Ravens have taken it? Patrick Mahomes is on a different level than any of those guys right now. And it's not just the MVP and Super Bowl MVP, which is a hilarious thing to say out loud, that it's not just the MVP or Super Bowl MVP. But it's, you want an MVP going 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns, going to an AFC championship game, and then did go all the way through winning a Super Bowl with an offense that this time was actually really banged up. He was injured over the course of the year and has these moments of complete and total game takeover. He has physical traits that are simply unmatched, and his trajectory is still pointing up. It's not like Lamar, let's say Lamar Jackson versus Aaron Rodgers. Ooh, spicy. Do we have something here we can talk about? Well, Lamar Jackson, we're waiting to see exactly how good he can be as an NFL passer. I don't want to be hyperbolic and be like, Lamar Jackson can't throw the football, because that's not true. They're running the wildcat every play. That's not true. But the question of how much more will Lamar Jackson's passing improve is really important to the question of where will his ceiling ultimately be over the course of his career. That's just a fair, reasonable thing to ask. That's all. But it feels like Aaron Rodgers has plateaued, may even be on the decline right now. The Packers even believe that. You know, who would you rather have for 1 year, Rodgers or Jackson? Beyond that, can I make you an argument for either side? Yeah, I think I probably could. Do you want Tom Brady or Deshaun Watson for one season? You can get somebody to take the Brady side of that. That's fine. Patrick Mahomes does not belong in any of these conversations. It's the combination of already achieved achievements plus the fact that his arrow is still pointing straight up. It's not. It doesn't even feel like he's achieving more than he has so far. It's going to be really hard to outpace himself because he won the MVP and then Super Bowl MVP in 2 years. So, you know, if he just alternates back and forth between those two for the next 10 or 15 years, I'm good, actually. I'll take that. Thank you. But if you can build me an argument that Mahomes is even close to being done developing mentally as an NFL quarterback, you can try. I don't expect it to be a very good one, though, honestly. I don't expect it to be a very good argument. The NFL is complicated, man. If you're listening to that Andy Reid sound whenever Nate asked it, Nate Taylor asked this question that we played, you know, of saying, hey, we'll have guys, you know, define whatever. I don't even remember what the play was that Andy Reid said, whatever the thing was that he said. But it was something so common that it was what he thought of as a pull it out of thin air example, and also something he was not protecting by any means, and I don't know what that meant. I have not yet asked Nate about it, but I thought, like, I'm curious if Nate had 4 seconds of panicking whenever Andy Reid hypothetically was asking him to explain some scheme thing, because I didn't even know what he was talking about. You saw Brady and like Peyton Manning become more and more surgical over the course of their careers, obviously. Because that's what happens among NFL quarterbacks. I mean, we've heard Ryan Fitzpatrick talk this offseason about, like, hey, Tua, I've made a lot of mistakes and I've learned a lot. I know a ton about being an NFL quarterback, and he does. But he's got physical limitations, but he's created such a backlog of information that we were talking to Seth Kizer about this also. I can't remember if this was on AES or this was on Times Ours this week, but I was talking to Seth Kizer of The Athletic, and he said, like, you can go back to, I think it was on Times Ours, you can go back to Peyton Manning's tape later in his career. And he said, so often Manning was throwing to his first read. Now, usually that statement comes as a bit of a criticism. It's like, oh, you know, Jameis just always throws to the first read and then we see where it goes. But what Seth's argument was is that Peyton Manning was so unbelievably dominant in pre-snap situations with his pre-snap reads that he knew who was going to be open before he hiked it. It's where you get all the Omaha, blue 42. Hey, he's going to be open in 3 seconds and you can't stop me. That was what all of that audibling at the line was Peyton Manning looking at the defense going, oh yeah, I've seen this before. I could diagnose this in my sleep. And I even know what you want me to think that it is. And I know that you want me to think that it's this, but I know that that actually means it's actually this. And so I'm going to shift this here. My first read's going to go to this guy. He's going to be open right here because you gave me this look that you thought was supposed to be this look that I knew was actually going this way. Hut! Like that ability, and that might come to Lamar Jackson also. That will continue to grow for him and for Deshaun Watson and whoever. But for you to pick literally any quarterback in football right now, literally anyone, except for Patrick Mahomes, you have to either expect Mahomes to regress or everyone else to close that gap. And I don't know how you would why you would expect either of those things at all for any reason. Mahomes has, in a lot of phases, as much growing to do as anybody. I think he would admit that, you know, in terms of the pre-snap stuff and everything. Also continuing to learn more and more of that from Andy Reid. Why would he lose ground to anyone in football? Why would anyone else catch up? Would you argue that anyone is even close to where Mahomes is right now in terms of success stories over the last 2 years? In his first year as a starter, he threw for 5,000 yards, 50 touchdowns, and won the MVP. And Lamar Jackson was super dynamic last year. But Mahomes then got hurt, so he didn't win the MVP again, was limited by injury even before his bigger injury. It was ankle slowing him down, and the knee is the big deal, comes back from that, and then goes on to have some absolutely unbelievable stretches in the playoffs, erasing deficits. And in the Super Bowl, his greatest stretch did not come until very late, which you can hear again tomorrow on Sports Radio 810, 3:30. But it did come. And it always does. Like, literally always. There's always that effort from Mahomes, and then it's an issue of how much ground does he need to make up, where's the rest of the team at, and they're Super Bowl champions. I know, I understand that right now I'm almost certainly preaching to the choir, which I guess is fine. You know, the choir needs to hear it too sometimes. But I know that you're probably listening and going like, yeah, we get it. Like, this is a stupid article. But I'm even just trying to, like, I'm trying to understand exactly where this comes from. We could probably have Tyler Dunn on again. He wrote the Sammy Watkins story. He takes Lamar Jackson in this article. He says, man, this is tough. Both are unique and both will rake in MVPs and Super Bowls, but for this, give me Jackson. His raw speed and juke ability as a runner is ridiculous. His physical gifts are unprecedented. There's no sign that anyone can stop Jackson in the open field, and the massive jump he made as a passer from year one to year two suggests he'll only get better through the air. Just as LeBron James developed a jump shot and blossomed into the NBA's best player of this era, if Jackson keeps improving as a passer, look out, he could have the same impact. Here's thinking, given his work ethic, he does. None of that is bad analysis for Lamar Jackson. The thing that I think there is questionable analysis, frankly, that I think is wrong analysis, I like Tyler, but I can tell him that I think he's wrong, is this idea that, hey, you know what? If he keeps having year-to-year jumps like he did year one to year two, then after several years, he might eventually develop into what Patrick Mahomes is right now. What he currently literally is at the moment. I understand all of the other skills around that. I mean, you're right. Stopping him in the open field is impossible. Stopping Patrick Mahomes through the air is impossible. Mike Freeman, who I also like, says Jackson in this article. It's like picking between a giant piece of birthday cake, the kind with the thick icing that tastes like heaven, and a dozen donuts packed with jelly. You cannot lose. But here's why I'm picking Jackson. Mahomes is an excellent athlete, but Jackson is something unique. He may be the best pure athlete in the sport. When things break down or receivers are covered, that athleticism can change the game in an instant. Combine Jackson with the ability to throw well with his stratospheric running skills, and we see why he's almost unstoppable and why I'm picking him. Once again, all of the running skills and everything, fantastic. Absolutely dynamic, a blast to watch. I do think the Ravens will be continually good. Is he a better player than Patrick Mahomes right now? Because I don't think anyone really has that argument to genuinely make. I cannot follow you there. Especially when we're talking about Lamar Jackson, throwing the ball is still a more efficient way to move an offense. Even as great as Jackson is at it, and as dynamic as he can be, it's also not like I'm using this as an argument for Kirk Cousins over Lamar Jackson. I would take Lamar Jackson over Kirk Cousins also. We're talking about literally the best player in the sport who is picking up deep downfield chunks in a way that is literally inarguable. We're on potential again here with the third one. The more I thought about the possibility, the more I leaned towards Jackson. The reason is simple. Jackson's already an MVP, and he hasn't come close to reaching his full potential. As good as Mahomes is, and he's great, it's hard to see him improving upon the type of numbers we've already seen. Whereas Jackson hasn't come close to realizing his full potential as a passer. The reigning NFL MVP will continue to refine his footwork and mechanics while becoming a more adept at reading defenses. Plus, the 2018 MVP can't affect the game in the same way Jackson can as a runner. Even if the Ravens' offense grows stagnant, Jackson's ability to create with his feet has never been seen at quarterback. This one frustrates me the most. Because it is, once again, saying, I'm taking Jackson because he has way more potential to live up to, even though we haven't seen that yet. Again, an argument for Jackson over literally anyone else? I think you could give me Mahomes, Wilson, Watson in that order, and then you can make then that argument I think would win for Lamar Jackson over anyone else in the sport right now. I think I'm taking those three first in Lamar four, I think. But the argument of he hasn't even gotten close to his potential as a passer for me is the exact argument that I would make against him. And it's the reason that I would make the argument for Wilson or Watson over Jackson as well. He hasn't developed fully as a passer yet. If it comes, he's going to be a tornado, even more so than he already is. But Mahomes already is that. He's still a very good runner. Like, he's a very good athlete. But he's doing it in the... Mahomes is doing this in the most dynamic way possible. But Lamar Jackson is unusual from the position. So we force ourselves into these conversations. Again, I don't really want to be perpetually annoyed by these arguments for the next decade of Mahomes versus this other guy. And I don't want to use any of this as like a Lamar Jackson actually isn't good take. Because that's not where I'm at all. But I do think the specifics of this one, like I think Mahomes has been awesome for two seasons, and we're already here doing the thing with I'll take the guy who's been awesome for one season, and we're probably gonna keep doing that forever. Whoever wins MVP next year or is second to Mahomes or whatever, it's gonna be well. Look, I like Kyler Murray also. I think I'm excited to see him in the Cardinals this year. Man, Kyler Murray wins MVP, throws 40 touchdowns, 4,000 yards. DeAndre Hopkins is great. That offense is great. Cliff Kingsbury's offense is great. Who would you rather have, Patrick Mahomes or Kyler Murray? Like, well, I don't know, man. Like, they both had statistically similar seasons, and Mahomes has been doing it for longer, and also that team was better. So I guess I'll take Mahomes. Like, well, you know what? Kyler Murray still has room to grow. Like, okay, well, Mahomes got better this year also. Why are we doing this to ourselves? I say I don't want to get stuck in these, and then yet, here we are. But it's an article that I saw, I know a lot of people saw, and I think it's annoying. It doesn't matter, but very, very little of this does, you know? This won't affect Patrick Mahomes' actual development, but it gave me something to talk about. Let's take a break. We'll close down the show whenever we come back on Sports Radio 810.
This is Sports Sunday.
I gain energy by talking.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I'm a plant in that way. My photosynthesis isn't with sunlight, it's with attention. I am bacterial.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I think this chair's gotten squeakier. I don't know if that was coming through, but I think this chair's gotten squeakier. Beards, can you max out my mic for a second? Not yet. Now, there we go. Ready? I think the chair's gotten squeakier.
That wasn't even all the way up.
That's good. That's why we pay you the big bucks. You got to know when to not accidentally ruin everyone's ears. You got to help me do that. Nearly out of time here on Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810. The rest of the lineup today, and then also during Memorial Day tomorrow. We are off. We have some excellent content coming tomorrow, though. But next up here on 810, it's The Ship with Darren Smith, followed by the Coca-Cola 600 at 5 o'clock. We've got a little NASCAR continuing as the only game in town at the moment. So that, of course, will bring you here on Sports Radio 810. And then tomorrow, we've got a bunch of great interviews and some of the things you may have missed recently from around Sports Radio 810. They'll take you all the way to 3:30 whenever we bring you Super Bowl 54, Chiefs-Niners. Again, I'm a broken record on this one, but if you haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, it's so much fun. You will enjoy it so much. It's an inarguably wonderful time as a Chiefs fan. And then after that, very, very cool, Super Bowl I, Packers-Chiefs, will follow it tomorrow afternoon. Here's a tweet that I've had open in a tab now for several days, and I continually forget to read it. I can read it now and then close it and have fresh tabs for next week. Michael Bay is set to produce a COVID-19-inspired film called Songbird, that will film in 5 weeks. It takes place 2 years in the future with the pandemic still ongoing due to a virus that continues to mutate. The tone has been compared to Cloverfield and Paranormal Activity.
He's going to start filming in 5 weeks or it will finish filming in 5 weeks?
I don't know, Beards. I've wondered the exact same thing and I never looked it up. And because frankly, I don't think it matters. I'm guessing it's supposed to start filming in 5 weeks.
Meanwhile, in Michael Bay's world, whenever you die from coronavirus, you explode.
So I have exactly two questions. One of them Beard has already touched on. One, do we need this?
No.
It feels like we don't.
No.
Now, this whole, like, found footage or, like, kind of hazy kind of horror thriller thing or whatever, I like that. I think that genre is kind of fun.
Not in the middle of the event, though.
Probably not in the middle of the event. Also, And look, if this does come out in like 5 weeks, then I'm just impressed by the turnaround. Do we need Michael Bay to do this, though?
Like Spielberg, I get.
Right. Or just some up-and-coming director that really has a feel for the Cloverfield Paranormal Activity kind of genre. Something kind of like that.
Michael Bay's not the guy for this.
I don't feel like Michael Bay's the guy for this.
It could be terrible, and that could make it great.
Even then, I don't know if we need it. This is the guy that did that Ninja Turtles movie, which actually, maybe that's what we need. We'll talk to you again on Tuesday. Bye, Mom. Happy Memorial Day, everybody.